A Radio Catskill.
Live from the Radio Catskill studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, the government shutdown is expected to extend into next week as Congress remains deadlocked and the Senate is set to leave D.C. today. As neither side is ready to give in and to the ongoing stalemate, local officials are preparing for the worst. Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government is here with potential local impacts on the shutdown and an update on open enrollment for Medicare. Plus, the latest episode of Curtain Call with Tom Candela, our weekly theater podcast. And local rock duo Basic Bitches are throwing a party for public radio, us. They're here to tell us about WJFF Fest, a benefit show this Sunday at New Memories in Parksville, bringing together some great local bands and fans to support the station. That's all coming up after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. President Trump is expected to leave shortly for Walter Reed Military Medical Center. He'll get his second physical this year. The White House says it is routine. Trump says he feels fine. The president says he hopes to go to the Mideast this weekend. This comes as Israel says the ceasefire has gone into effect with Hamas. Israeli troops have pulled back to areas within Gaza that were specified in the agreement. Hamas is now supposed to release all remaining hostages. Israel's former ambassador to the U.S., Michael Oren, says the next step is vital.
And we move from those two stages, the return of hostages and the IDF withdrawal, to the disarmament of Hamas. And if that cannot be accomplished within a certain amount of time, then it's going to be a tremendous challenge for American, Israeli, and indeed Middle Eastern diplomacy.
There are reports Israel is still attacking areas in Gaza where Israeli troops are still allowed to deploy. This is day 10 of the federal government shutdown, with Republicans and Democrats unable to reach any agreement on a spending bill. President Trump has said he'll cut, quote, Democrat programs during the shutdown, but he didn't identify which ones. Meanwhile, Social Security checks are still going out. NPR's Ashley Lopez reports agency employees say they cannot help people with questions during the shutdown.
Benefit verification letters are a service provided by the Social Security Administration that act as a sort of income verification that is key to obtaining aid like housing assistance, fuel assistance, and help from nonprofits. But during the shutdown, the agency says people can only use either the automated phone service or online portal to get their letters. Christine Lazotte, a claims representative for the agency in Auburn, Maine, said those systems don't work for everyone.
This is the most vulnerable population. These are elderly people who've never used a computer.
Agency employees say they're dealing with an uptick of frantic and upset callers as they work without pay. Ashley Lopez, NPR News.
Stocks open higher this morning as some government number crunchers go back to work to calculate the September inflation rate. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrials are up about 140 points.
The government shutdown has delayed key economic reports, but some furloughed employees at the Labor Department are coming back to work in order to complete the September inflation report. That report's a key ingredient used to calculate the cost of living adjustment that Social Security recipients will receive next year. Gasoline prices continue to drop as demand for gas falls to a four-month low. AAA reports the average price of regular gas is now $3.10 a gallon. It's under $3 a gallon in more than half the states. And federal regulators are investigating dozens of instances in which Tesla vehicles ran red lights or broke other traffic laws while operating in self-driving mode. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR. This year's Nobel Peace Prize has been awarded to Venezuelan opposition leader Maria Corina Machado. The Norwegian Nobel Committee is commending her work advancing democratic rights for the people of Venezuela. The South American country of Peru has a new leader. Amid soaring crime and corruption allegations, President Dina Boluarte has been impeached. John Otis reports her replacement has also been plagued by scandal.
Dina Boluarte was the first woman to serve as Peru's president, but she faced controversy from the start. She is under investigation for accepting Rolex watches as bribes and for human rights abuses during a government crackdown on protests. But it was her failure to stem a crime wave that led Peru's Congress to oust her shortly before midnight Thursday. Boluarte was replaced by José Herí, the former head of Congress who took the oath of office early this morning to become Peru's eighth president in the past 8 years. In December, Herí was accused of rape, but the case was dropped by Peru's attorney general. For NPR News, I'm John Otis.
This week, California adopted a law aimed at cutting out ultra-processed foods in all school lunches. State health officials have to come up with guidelines, and public schools have to start phasing out ultra-processed foods in about 4 years. California defines these foods as those that have one or more additives, such as non-nutritious food sweeteners. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Drexel University, whose cooperative education program positions students to explore future careers before graduation. This is experiential education. More at drexel.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Well, as you heard, the federal government shutdown is rolling into day 10 today, and senators yesterday voted down dueling funding bills for the seventh time. It looks like the Senate is leaving D.C. today and won't come back until after the holiday weekend. That means things are still in limbo, including at the local level. Joining us now is Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government, who joins us every Friday with an update on Sullivan County Government. We talked about this last week,
yes.
And we also spoke to Health and Human Services Commissioner John Little about potential impacts earlier last week. As this drags on, you know, we had said, and you had said that, you know, by the end of the month, if this isn't resolved, we're getting closer and closer to the end of the month. What's happening in Monticello when you're talking about preparing for that?
Well, we just have concerns that come November, we're going to find ourselves either without money to provide for certain services or having to find money to keep certain things going. You know, I just found out from Commissioner Little. He had put out a notice yesterday. If no action is taken before the end of the month on the Home Energy Assistance Program, it will not be able to start as planned on November 3rd. Which means that people who are relying on getting that first big benefit to be able to put fuel into their furnace or their stove or whatever to heat their homes may not get that. And that could be a very serious situation.
And so we've already had some freeze watches and warnings this week.
Oh, I had a hard frost this morning.
Yeah. So, and so that means some people are in jeopardy if this doesn't get resolved.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Does the local at the local government level? I mean, I don't think you have that much interaction with the federal level, but at the state level or any other communication that you're getting, is there anything that's happening or any type of progress beyond what we're all hearing in the national news that it's deadlocked and hey, let's vote again and it's not going anywhere?
Right. Yeah. No. At this point, that is what we're hearing too. I mean, the state has stayed in close touch with us. So we have a good relationship with the folks. At the various different state agencies, many of them give us weekly updates and things, but a lot of it is just sort of sit tight, wait, and hope that everything is going to get resolved. And I'm sure they're planning for some things in the background, but we, because most of the money for these programs is funneled to us via the state, we can't necessarily plan independent of the state. We have to wait to hear what the state's going to send our way. Will they help fill in the gaps or will they not be able to? With HEAP already, the state had told us because of the federal cuts, no longer offering the Clean and Tune program, the repair your furnace program, it would just be the basic HEAP benefit. But now that too, I'm not sure that the state has the fiscal wherewithal to stand in the gap, at least totally with that. I would think they would try to help where they can. We have, like I said, found a very good partnership with the state on this. This is not something where I'm coming on and talking about another unfunded mandate kind of thing. Yeah. The state has been side by side with us on this, but they too, they're not the federal government. And so it really depends upon the federal government ironing this out. And I just don't know when that's going to happen. This seems like an impasse that is very deep. So,
and it seems like Americans are about to start feeling it more. Mm-hmm. We've seen in the week airport delays from air traffic controllers, for instance, some IRS closures, and we're talking about how it could impact HEAP at the local level. I'm wondering if you think that there might be just any movement when folks start to feel the pinch a little bit more.
Well, I think then it really is going to hit home with some of our federal representatives that they need to figure this out. Right now we're in that grace period, for lack of a better term, where everything is going to pretty much tootle along through the end of October as it should. But when November comes, it could be potentially swift and severe issues that people are facing, because people, I'm sure, in Sullivan County have been waiting for the HEAP program to start. We've done pre-registration with certain folks who are eligible for that, and they may be depending upon that. And if they don't get those fuel oil deliveries, how are we going to be able to help them? Our warming centers don't open until November 21st, so are we going to have to find emergency housing for people? I mean, the county stands ready to assist people in whatever way we can, but we, as taxpayers will tell us, we are not made of money. We don't have endlessly deep pockets. So we have to do things in a way where it's sustainable, or we're looking at, you know, down the road, further tax increases. And I would hope that our federal representatives understand and realize the impacts from their level all the way down to the town and village level, because if they let this go on for too much longer, the impacts are going to come. It's not going to be 6 months down the road. It's going to be next month that we start seeing impacts.
It seems the main part of the stalemate is health care, particularly the subsidies for the Affordable Care Act that would not be extended, thus increasing health care costs for not just people enrolled in that program, but all folks, because it's all tied together in this crazy system. That also impacts some of Medicare. Medicare already impacted potentially by the Big Beautiful Bill Act, with cuts that could be coming in the next year. However, the Medicare open enrollment still tootles along, as you said. that seemingly normal thing will happen October 15th, despite all this chaos.
Yes, and tootles, I don't know, is that from reading Winnie the Pooh as a kid or something? Yeah. I don't know. I like that term. So tootles along. So anyway, yes, October 15th starts open enrollment for Medicare, which can be a very complex and intimidating thing to deal with. Happy to say that our Office for the Aging has experts at hand and can connect you with them if you give them a call. Their number is 847-0241. That's 847-0241. They are eager, actually, to talk with you about this. You don't have to go this alone and try to understand the complex rules. And some people have likened it to trying to prepare your own taxes. It can just be pull your hair out moment. Not that I have to worry about pulling my hair out. But that said, we want to help on this. We can help on this. We've got people who are professionally trained to do this kind of navigation. I think that is their title. I think they're like a navigator. And we ask people, just reach out and we will set up an appointment with you and work it through it so that you can be confident you're doing exactly what you should be doing when you should be doing it.
Legislature was back in session yesterday after last week's holiday break. Was it a holiday break? Is that what it was? I forgot. Mm-hmm.
No, it was Yom Kippur. Yes, right. I'm sorry. It was.
I can't remember what day it is.
I'm sorry. Honestly. I was forgetting. I'm thinking, no, this is we're off Monday.
There's another holiday.
Yeah. So.
But they met yesterday. A lot of things on the table there. There was some public comment about the waste to energy facility. What else was the legislature talking about yesterday?
The public comment was, the legislators didn't respond to it. I think there was also about ICE and Hispanic Heritage Month and things. There's things interesting for people to watch, and I encourage them to watch. watch it, but I'm not here to speak on the public's behalf. And since legislators didn't really respond, I'll let folks take a look at that online. These videos are worth watching, and you can click right to, like, if you just want to see the public comment for a meeting, you can click on the agenda where it says public comment, and it will fast forward the video. Is that still a term? Fast forward to that point.
Toodle it along.
Yeah, it'll toodle it along.
What the kids say today.
Right point. So, but legislature did have some interesting things they did yesterday. We honored the Sullivan County Volunteer Firefighters Association's two firefighters of the year, who was Craig Burkle and also Thomas Dempsey. Craig Burkle, known as Berkey by a lot of people, he has been a force not only in the Narrowsburg Fire Department, but also in the Volunteer Firefighters Association for goodness 40 years. So he is just one of those folks that he may not directly fight fires anymore, but he's the kind of guy that you want with you on your team. Also, Thomas Dempsey, who is past chief of the Bloomingburg Fire Department, current chairman of their Board of Fire Commissioners. He's been a member of that fire company for 41 years. Three times chief of that department. So these were two guys who were very worthy of the honor that they got from the Volunteer Firefighters Association. Legislators wanted to honor them as well. And then also two local firefighters who were involved in basically the way it's put here, saving the life of a 70-year-old man who had been dragged and trapped under his own vehicle after it unexpectedly accelerated in reverse in Monticello, in a parking lot in Monticello. Hmm. Well, thankfully, Liberty firefighter and Monticello police officer Mark Johnstone happened to be right nearby, and he basically jumped into a nearby Prestige towing flatbed truck. This would have been fascinating to see. You would have thought they were shooting a movie, probably, and immediately utilized it to lift the vehicle with the assistance of Rock Hill firefighter Joe Hand, who was also in the area, and another worker. And according to the chief of the Rock Hill Fire District, Brian Soller, their swift and coordinated efforts allowed first responders to safely extract the victim, who survived. Wow. So that kind of thing, if you think about it, getting out of a vehicle and maybe you didn't put it fully in park and you accidentally hit the accelerator, it's just something I feel like could happen to me. And to have those people right there when the worst happens like that, that must have been just something to see. And the legislature was really happy to recognize these folks in our midst. We call them heroes. They wouldn't call themselves that, but we think of them that way. And what a wonderful thing to have these people there who were not acting in any paid capacity. They were working as their volunteer firefighters training had taught them to. And so we really appreciate them. The other thing that happened in legislature, actually it happened after legislature. We did it at the end of the day. I had posted the other day that the government center was celebrating its 50th birthday because the plaque on the building says dedicated October 1975. I also have old copies of the Republican Watchman newspaper from Monticello, and I was looking up through that to see, okay, when did they do the dedication ceremony? I can maybe get some pictures of it under construction. Well, I came across the story of the dedication ceremony of November. It was in the November 20th, 1975 issue of the Watchman, which is no longer published, but was a major paper out of Monticello in its day. And it showed the then chair of the Board of Supervisors, which predated the legislature, Joe Raffa, and the county historian at the time, William Smith, dedicating the building and a cornerstone that said 1975. But they were inserting documents into the cornerstone. Nobody that I knew, and I like local history, remembered that or knew that there was a time capsule inside the cornerstone. The cornerstone never was actually in the building proper. It was in near a fountain and a planting area in front of the building when we had stairs to get into the building, and obviously we needed to get rid of that.
What was in the corner?
So we found the cornerstone. It had been preserved, and we opened it up yesterday. And aside from very, very stinky air that was in there because some moisture had been sealed in with it there, we found that most every township in the county had inserted something in there about their history. There was a coin in there. There was the Sullivan County welcome packet from 1975. However, all of it was so drenched in water that we need to dry it out right now. So other than taking the documents out, we didn't open them up because we were going to rip them apart. They were so wet. But They have been sealed in there for the past 50 years. And the thing about this that stuns me is that there's no mention on the cornerstone that there is a time capsule in there. Our current staff thought it was just some repair work that had been done up top where it was clocked and a lid was put on. But actually, it's hollow inside. And so, as I said to my staff, now just call me Indiana Jones. But it was finding that newspaper article that tipped me off to the fact that there was something inside. It wasn't just a pretty thing that says, you know, a piece of marble that says 1975. It had been hollowed out.
You know, what are the rules for time capsules? First, I guess the first rule is like label it as a time
capsule.
But this happened. This happened recently in London, where there was a reconstruction of a building there, and they opened up a time capsule that I think Princess Diana helped put together.
Okay.
But I always thought that time capsules would be opened by aliens or something.
Right. It did not have any listing as to when it should be opened again. I think it's good we didn't wait another 50 years to open it, because I think that stuff would have been like the Ark of the Covenant that the Indiana Jones opened, where it's just dust. Well, hopefully no angel of death in there too. But it's something now. We're going to dry this out and we're going to open it up. I do have a video I shot of the actual opening. Al Dumas, the town of Thompson historian whose dad worked on the government center, was there to take all these things out. So expect to see the video later today. It'll be interesting. You won't have to smell the smell of like chemical formaldehyde. I don't know what it was. And just some people said rotting carrots, but it didn't smell like that to me. But we're going to open it up and hopefully have something represented from every township in the county that has been in there unknown for the past 50 years. And we have an idea that we might actually create a new time capsule, because we'll just display it now maybe in the lobby where it's more climate controlled and seal it, maybe vacuum seal it. But we're going to think about maybe putting some 2025 material in there to be opened in 2075.
Look at that. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more from Indiana Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
Coming up on WCNY's The Capitol Press Room, we'll examine the shrinking New York State prison population and consider how much further the decline can go. All that and much more, whether you download, stream, or tune in to WCNY's The Capitol Press Room, this afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
On This Old House Radio Hour, Nick Offerman's taking us back to his childhood home where he honed his lifelong dedication to craft.
I helped Dad as much as I could. We built a small barn that was big enough to house the riding mowers, and it had a loft. That was the first thing I remember feeling like I actually contributed.
Plus, everything you need to know about mold, but we're afraid to ask. That's this week on This Old House Radio Hour. Sunday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, joined by Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government. Did you hear that last promo?
Yeah.
You should listen to that for your time capsule.
Can mold grow in a sealed environment, though? I don't know. So I hope that's not what I was inhaling yesterday, but you'll get to see it.
This Old House Radio Hour, Sunday morning at 7:00. All right, let's talk a little bit more about some things going on in the county. The Board of Elections having extended hours on certain days that lead up to the November 4th election.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They had given a report at legislature, a written report yesterday. They're going to have extended hours on Tuesday the 21st, 9 to 7. That's 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Thursday the 23rd from 9 to 7. Tuesday the 28th from 9 to 8, and Thursday the 30th from 9 to 8. Now, this is independent of the early voting. This is the Board of Elections office itself. They are going to stay open later in the day so that people who have questions or have needs or need to do something or file something at the last minute can do it. So it's an extra service above and beyond what they're already offering. I'm frankly very impressed they're doing this, because I know how busy they are with everything else going on, because early voting starts Saturday, October 25th from 9 to 5 p.m. So
Yeah, and also want to remind folks that wherever you're listening, you can go to our website and our election page. It's right there on the right-hand side of the main landing page at wjffradio.org. Click on that, and it takes you to a link for Vote 411. You can find your ballot. You can register to vote, check your registration. This is run by the League of Women Voters Education Fund, and so no matter where you're listening, you can punch in your information and your address to get started, and it'll give you the personalized voting information. Also, here in Sullivan County, check out the Board of Elections. But again, wherever you're listening, we have that resource for you as well. And remember to vote.
It's a great service you guys provide, really, to have that, because not everybody lives in Sullivan County, but you have a huge audience area, and it's important for people to be informed when they go to the polls.
And it's a really great resource that the League of Women Voters provides for free to go in and just like figure out mm-hmm. what's going on, because we, as we know, things are complex when it comes to all of this.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit more about some workforce situations here. The Workforce Summit is this Wednesday at the Cartwright.
Yes. This is a really great thing that our Center for Workforce Development has put together. It is a workforce summit focusing. They did this last year. It focuses on the employers in the area, and specifically this will be about serving those who are differently abled, or the older term disabled. Now, how do we incorporate people with physical or intellectual disabilities into our work? You know, we are lucky to have like the Center for Discovery and New Hope Community and others that have Sullivan ARC have these wonderful work programs that are tailored for people with intellectual disabilities. But say you don't have an intellectual disability, but you have a physical disability of some sort. Well, the law says you're entitled to be able to work in anything that you would be capable of working in, but employers don't necessarily know how to realize that. So this is going to be at the Cartwright for employers to really talk about with one another, and also some guest speakers that we have, including like our new Human Rights Commission Executive Director, Ramon Wilson, one of the smarter people I know, about how to make our workplaces friendly for those folks and to take advantage of the skills that they can bring to really make a business successful. So I think this is wonderful that our Center for Workforce Development is doing this. Scott Curry is the one that's leading this charge. He's worked really hard on it, and I will have some more to talk about it next week when I see you after the event.
There is another resources fair for specifically for seniors coming up Wednesday. The Office for the Aging is having a public hearing and a resource fair. Talk about some of those resources and what the hearing's about.
Yeah. This will actually be the general public's first opportunity, as long as you're 55 plus, to see the new airport terminal, which we hopefully will dedicate formally on Tuesday. But on Wednesday, October 15th, starting at 10 a.m., the Office for the Aging is going to have its annual public hearing. They have it in different locations every year. It's required by the state to explain the services that we offer, but also, very importantly, to get feedback from the people we serve about what we do. Do they like it? Do they dislike it? Is there something they'd like to see improved upon, something that they don't use anymore? And after that, running till 2 p.m., we have a senior resource fair for our older adults, full of vendors, partner information. There'll be refreshments. It really is a one-stop center for everything. Plus, you're going to get to see the airport terminal and all its brand new shiny glory. We have asked people to pre-register, but you don't have to. However, if you want more information, Office for the Aging, 807-0243, 845-807-0243. We also can help you if you need special accommodation or transportation to the site. We are empowered by state and federal law to be able to offer that. Again, that's going to be at the County Airport Wednesday, October 15th, starting at 10 a.m.
And speaking of transportation, that transportation survey is continuing. And tell folks why it's important that they participate.
Yep. I won't read the URL because it's a bit of a long URL, but it's out there. We are updating our Coordinated Transportation Services Plan, which identifies the needs and strategies to make public transit, but not just public transit, paratransit, which is services for the differently abled, and human services transportation, like our shopping buses, more available and beneficial to the community. So, for example, if you're like, I want to see Moop Sullivan come to this location, or I need a shopping bus for my elderly mother here so that she can go get something on her own and not have to rely on me all the time. We want to hear about that. The survey is very short. I actually brought it with me here that you could see. It's just 4 pages. And it allows you to tell us what you think we should be doing. And we're listening. This is going to be very crucial in figuring out this plan.
I'm looking through it. It does seem pretty simple to use it. But question 14 lists all the communities and where would you like more service available? Check all that apply. And it lists all the major communities in the county.
And this is the time to do it, because when we put this plan together, we have to present it to the state, to the county leaders, and it's going to carry a lot of weight. So fill it out. If you don't have the ability to do it online, you can give a call again to our Office for the Aging. Actually, they can provide you with paper copies that you could fill out, and then we would take it that way. But we have the link to it online on our website. And we need people to participate. I believe the deadline is at the end of this month.
And while this is not an official county project, you are participating in the Daffodil Project. Can you remind folks about that and more details about
The
participation on the event on October 17th?
This is with Hope Crony, Dr. Hope. Is it Blecker?
Blecker.
Crony? Yeah. She is just a dynamo, as we were talking off air before. She just really has a lot of things that she is doing. And one of the things she's been working on in the community is the Daffodil Project. This is a nationwide, might even be worldwide project, for all I know, but planting daffodils in memory of the children who perished in the Holocaust. And so she had asked the legislature, and they agreed to plant 3,000 yellow daffodil bulbs as a living memorial. It's going to be right at the end of our entrance sidewalk on, I think it's called Sturgis Road there, right near the bus terminal. We're going to start doing that at 9 a.m. on Friday, October 17th, Friday. The public is invited. So of course, bring gardening gloves or knee pads, trowels, but we'll try to provide some of that stuff there.
We should have water as well.
You're invited to help plant if you'd like to. Yes. It's supported by the legislature. Hope's Compass Fund, the Daffodil Project, Sullivan Allies Leading Together, and the Jewish American Society for Historic Preservation. Also a special thank you to E. Tetz and Sons, who provided Hope with a boulder on which we're going to have a permanent plaque installed so that people can understand what these daffodils are doing there, that they're not just sitting there. And 50 years later, like that time capsule, we're wondering, what? No, this is going to be an appropriately marked spot. 3,000 bulbs planted. It's actually the time of year to plant them, I guess. What do I know? And they will then flower next year and be a beautiful tribute to a very awful time in human history, but something we can never afford to forget.
It's a nice prominent location, too. Folks going in and out of the bus terminal there, the government center.
Driving right by, you'll see it there.
Mm-hmm. That's Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government. He joins us every Friday. And we will talk to you again next Friday. Have a great weekend.
You too.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, it's the latest episode of Curtain Call, our weekly theater podcast. Tom Candela is here with a preview next. This is Radio Chatskill.
My name is Stephen Fowler, and I'm a politics reporter for NPR based in the South. When the DOGE initiative said that it was saving taxpayers billions of dollars by firing federal workers and making wholesale changes to government, through hours and hours of research and fact-checking, we did reporting that found that was not the case. We brought the receipts. NPR's coverage of government restructuring isn't just for and about people in D.C. It's reporting from member stations across the country, bringing the impacts in their local communities, whether you're in Washington, D.C., or Atlanta, or Anchorage, Alaska. I think right now what the audience needs from NPR is more community, more information, more understanding. When you donate to this station, that's the type of journalism you support. Please give to this station today.
Make your donation at wjffradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Every Friday, the latest episode of Curtain Call, our weekly theater podcast, drops, and Tom Candela, the host and producer, is here to tell us about what we can expect in this week's episode. Tom,
good hello. Morning once again, Tim. Good morning. This frosty October morning.
Very frosty. Yeah. What do you have for us on this episode?
Well, this week I was joined by the very great and well-known Austin Pendleton and Bradford Cover. He is the artistic director of the Resident Acting Company, and together they are bringing a brand new production of A Midsummer Night's Dream to the Sheen Center over in New York City, which opens this very weekend. I should say previews start this weekend. They open on the 15th. Now, this is not your typical Midsummer Night's Dream. In this version, the Rude Mechanicals, who are usually play just a small role with a play within a play of Shakespeare's piece. In this particular production, the Rude Mechanicals take over the entire story. They play everyone from the lovers to the fairies and turning Shakespeare's classic upside down in a most delightful and unexpected way.
All right, let's take a listen. It's the preview of the latest episode of Curtain Call with Tom Candela. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. Today we're going to be stepping into the whimsical and mischievous world of William Shakespeare, A Midsummer Night's Dream. But this show has a twist. This fall, the Resident Acting Company brings their very first fully staged production to New York City, and it is anything but ordinary. Joining me today to talk about this daring new production are two theater powerhouses. Austin Pendleton, actor, playwright, director, teacher, and one of the founders of ARC, and Bradford Cover, artistic director of the company and the director of this production. Austin, Bradford, I want to welcome both of you to Curtain Call.
Thank you.
Hey, Tom, thanks for having us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Yeah. So, Bradford, I'm going to ask you the first question. As the artistic director of this production, how did the company form?
Well, you know, when the Pearl went out of business, we were all a little sad. And we were also wondering what could happen next. Almost immediately, we started talking about it. And we had meetings. We drank some white wine and we ate some mixed nuts. And we talked about possibilities and what we meant to each other, and we thought we just have to find a way forward. We had no money, we had a lot of talent, incredible group of actors, and we had a lot of ideas, but we were starting from ground zero.
Okay. And Austin, what was your role in that initial meetings and formation of the company?
Oh, I just acted.
Okay.
We brought Austin in a little bit later, frankly. We had worked with Austin a lot at the Pearl, and it occurred to us as we were getting things together that we really ought to bring Austin into the family officially. So that happened a little bit later in the process.
Right. Now, the Midsummer Night's Dream, as you're doing it, is being described as a meta-theatrical. Can you give us a better idea of when we refer to meta-theatrical, what that simply means?
You know, Shakespeare was meta before there was meta. He creates these meta ideas of perhaps different realities, right? So meta can mean different things to different people, but fundamentally in the theater, it just means that we're operating in some different worlds are coexisting.
Okay. So actors playing actors or characters who know they're in a play, so that play within a play idea, a lot of times breaking the fourth wall. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Okay. There's really not a fourth wall in Shakespeare. Originally, they were performing outdoors during the day.
Sure.
And a lot of the writing is clearly directed directly at the audience. All of Shakespeare's famous soliloquies and a lot of the speeches are the audience. So it's as if you're in their brain, following them and experiencing what they're experiencing.
And for the RAC production, though, of A Midsummer Night's Dream, when we talk of meta, the quality comes from the amateur actors within the play taking over the whole show, not just a little bit of it as traditionally done in Midsummer. Is that correct?
That's right. But in our version, I thought, well, it'd be very interesting to see if they're not only doing that, but they're working on the whole thing. The mechanicals are doing it.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you brought up the mechanicals. Let's explain a little bit about that, because when we refer to the theatrical mechanicals. We're talking about the players, right? Or the rude mechanicals. That comes directly from Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream. And when we say rude, we're not talking about we're not talking about mean or impolite people. We're talking unsophisticated or unrefined or ordinary people.
Working people,
carpenters, weavers, tinkers, whatever might be the case. And they are putting on this show because they're pretty much taking over everything. The whole thing, right?
Yeah, they're doing everything. And we're still learning and discovering what that means. And it's very enjoyable because we have such a brilliant group of people here. So we're letting this piece evolve. Austin's playing Bottom, and Bottom's playing Aegeus. He's playing Pyramus.
Yeah, I'm playing a very angry guy named Eccles.
Aegeus.
Yeah, Hermia's father. Yes,
who I believe has the hots for his daughter.
Oh, is that right? Oh, that's a two twist.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
A little incestuous relationship there.
Well, the way he talks about her is shocking. In terms of the role of Bottom, and I think I'm going to get in trouble saying this. All you have to do is say the lines. The lines are incredibly funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like all great comedy, you have to play it very seriously. The humor of Bottom is he takes himself very, very seriously. He doesn't know he's funny.
Okay.
He thinks he's the greatest actor in the world.
Yes, and that in and of itself can be really a good point of comedy, theater, right?
Totally.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So these meta elements that you're incorporating into the show, Bradford, how do you think it might change the audience experience of seeing Midsummer Night's? Because basically people are going to be coming with an expectation of they know Shakespeare, they know the play, everyone's seen the play, have heard of the play. How do you think this might evolve their experience?
Well, one thing I decided early on was that we were going to be very clear in our advertising and in our poster that it is the mechanicals doing the whole play. Okay. So we're trying to let the audience know that that's what's happening before they get here. And that in itself raises a certain expectation, a different kind of expectation in the minds of the audience. I've always had a soft spot for these guys, these mechanical characters in the play. I've always liked them, and I've always felt that they've been perhaps a little mistreated by productions in the past. And so it's very sort of almost pleasurable to kind of put them in charge and really embrace them. And as Austin was saying, take them seriously. But also we have to accept them as an acting troupe that's doing their best, that's doing what they think is right.
Right.
I think it's absolutely right for what we're doing here. A group of working class people who love acting and who feel the need to put on the whole play. It's almost as if they've taken over the play. You know, they exist as a subplot in the play, but they're sort of breaking out of that and saying, you know what, we can do the whole thing.
Right.
Just leave us alone and let us do our work. So we're trying to just give it to them and see where they take it. We're giving a lot of room for them to perchance be good.
Right. Well, that brings me to my next question, because now this requires a great amount of ensemble work to pull this off. You mentioned before that you have a lot of great talent. Tell us a little bit about how they work as an ensemble.
Yeah, we're still forming the ensemble. We started rehearsals a few days ago, but we're doing things just to kind of bring us together as an artistic family. And we had a retreat a couple of weeks ago up in Connecticut in the country. And we had some dinners together, and we did some workshopping, and we played some music, and we just started forming the artistic bonds that are necessary in an acting troupe. And they're always forming, they're always changing, but they're there. It's been wonderful. So we're making discoveries every day together, and we're learning from each other, and we're finding this piece together.
And Austin, have you been there for these rehearsals thus far?
Yes.
Yes, and how is that going for you?
Pretty exciting.
Is it? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, with one or two exceptions, I'd never worked with any of these actors before, but they just sort of open up to you. So I'm beginning to feel like I've known them for years.
Oh, that's great.
You know, rehearsals of any play are just sort of about coming every day, day by day. Mm-hmm. And I've learned over the years not to have any preconceptions of how it's going to work. That just stay open.
Right. Open to the possibilities.
Yeah. If only the man could write.
Yeah, that's something about that Shakespeare. It gets very... Yeah, go ahead.
We'll say that Austin brings to any process something very special. Austin brings a wonderful sense of spontaneity to everything that he does, whether he's directing or acting, and in a way gave us permission back in the days we were working at the Pearl to understand that it doesn't have to be the same every day, that we can trust our instincts and try things.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like that sounds great. So in other words, it's like jazz musicians sort of playing together. And
that's right.
And they improv as they go along and creating music together, which somehow just works.
That's right.
Yeah.
But you still have to balance traditional Shakespeare with this innovation. So how is that going to be reflected in this version of Midsummer?
I just don't think about it.
You don't? Okay.
I also try not to think about it too much because I am always hoping that we can create something that perhaps no one has seen before.
Yes.
Right.
Right. So a clown-inspired kaleidoscope. Can you describe, Bradford, a little bit of what that means and what we can expect coming to see this production of A Midsummer Night's Dream?
Yes, sure. We're talking about theater clown, right? Not circus clown.
Right.
And really what that means is it's a very in-depth investigation of the character you're playing. Every artist has a different way in. And in our process, they're all legitimate and valid. But we are doing some playful things in rehearsal, like some exercises and some clown games, just to kind of loosen things up and see what ideas get sparked.
All right. And so far, those ideas, are you finding some of those sparks happening, Austin?
Absolutely. I jump out of bed every morning.
Yeah, I think you're starting off with a good production. Everybody knows the show. It is a comedy. It is fun. And you have some names, let's face it, right? I mean, Austin is no small potatoes when it comes to theater or film.
Yeah, small potatoes. Did you know that?
Clearly, you haven't seen everything I've done.
No, I haven't seen everything you've done. But, you know, certainly you have a name in the theater. So once again, folks, the show is called A Midsummer Night's Dream. It is being presented by the Resident Acting Company. October 11th is when previews start, and it runs through and including November the 2nd. And you can get tickets by going to their websites. That's racnyc.org. And also how you could sign up for their newsletter, how you can become more familiar with not only the show, but what is going to be happening for them in the future. All right, gentlemen, I want to again thank you so much for participating. I appreciate your time and I appreciate what you're doing for theater. And,
thank you, Tom. It means everything to me that you wanted to do this, and I'm very grateful.
Bye-bye, Austin.
Bye-bye.
Take care, gentlemen.
Bye.
Thank you so much.
And that's Tom Candela with a preview of the latest episode of our weekly theater podcast, Curtain Call. You can catch the full episode and all of the episodes at our website, wjffradio.org. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, get ready to rock for radio. Local duo Basic Bitches are throwing WJFF Fest, a loud local all-out benefit bash. Coming up on Sunday, we'll learn more after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, Arundhati Roy, author of The God of Small Things. She'll talk to Deepa Fernandez about her memoir, Mother Mary Comes to Me. It's about her childhood in Kerala, India, including her complicated relationship with a brilliant but abusive mother. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Hey there, Jason Dole here asking you to help Radio Catskill kick off our fall fun drive in person at the Double Down on Radio Catskill event 2 to 5 Sunday afternoon at the Arnold House. free admission, fun games for kids and adults, tunes by DJ Tikka Masala, delicious hors d'oeuvres, cash bar, and your chance to win great prizes from local businesses. It's Double Down on Radio Catskills Sunday afternoon at the Arnold House up on Chandelier in Livingston Manor. I'll see you there.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, also on Sunday, after the Double Down event, a pair of local rockers are pumping up the jam for public radio. Crystal Groh and Naomi Scott of the band Basic Bitches are organizing the benefit concert called WJFF Fest at New Memories in Parksville on Sunday. It starts at 5. It's a night of local bands, loud guitars, and community spirit, all in support of Radio Catskill. And both of them are here this morning. Hello.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hey.
Thank you guys for being here. Excuse me. Thanks for this event. Tell us about how you came up with this idea. And by the way, this was your idea. We got an email like, hey. And we're like, this sounds cool. So tell folks how it came about and, you know, why you wanted to do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we obviously love WJFF. We are big supporters of local radio and community journalism, and these are all things that are just really, really important to us as people, as members of the community. But as a band, it also felt like this is what we can do. Like, this is what we can do to help. Like, this is what we can do to support. Like, it's worth it. It's worth it to give it a go. So let's put a show together. Let's get all of the local loud bands that we can find together in one place. And just because we can, this is what we can do to support local radio and community journalism in our area. And it felt worth it.
Yeah. I think also, we, as what we like to term the local Riot Girl band, you know, there's a lot of wonderful musicians in this area. And, a lot of the events that we see are, you know, they're folk, and they are sensitive singer-songwriters, and they are...
Which is fine.
Which is fine. And I love, you know, there's a place for that, and I love it. It's just not what we are.
Yeah.
So we're always looking for places for us to play, because we are loud. We like loud music, and we like to gather with people who also like loud music. And this Sunday, we'll be doing that for WJFF.
Well, and since we lost our federal funding, the community has really stepped up and supported us, which has been amazing. And Mimi Bradley, our development director here, and I have had this little thing that we say whenever something comes up, we're like, everybody wants to help.
Yeah,
and it's like, it's true, and they do. And they also want to help in their own way. Like you were saying, Crystal, like this is what we can do.
Right.
And I love that on Sunday, we have these two big events that are going on that are completely different. And we actually talked about, well, should we be doing them on the same day or not? And it's like, well, they might attract the same people. They might attract different people. But it also is just this great thing of the community coming out and supporting the station, which we're so grateful for.
Yeah.
But it really does just show how much, you know, everybody wants to help.
Right. Well, I mean, and we are grateful that we have you all, and we want to keep you doing what you do for us, you know. But I also think there's something about like punk rock and like rock and roll that's about independence, but also solidarity. And that's about resistance. And that's about, you know, bringing people together for a common cause to like stand up and say, this is what's important to us. And this is what we believe in as a community. And that's what we wanted to do. And we wanted to do it, and we wanted to be loud about it. That's what we wanted.
Yeah. There's another public radio station, that has a slogan that they're doing for their fall fund drive, which is resistance has a frequency. It's like they're leaning into that. So it's everybody in the system, the public media system is all in the same boat, right?
Yeah.
We're all impacted. So every community is facing it. And so it's great to see the support that's coming up. Talk about the other loud bands that are going to be there. Tell us about them.
Absolutely. So we have CRISPA, who are, I think, sort of unofficially the house band of New Memories at this point. We have Creatures, who are a three-piece. It's kind of surf rock. There's no vocals. Instead of a bass guitar, there's a bass saxophone going through a lot of amps. It's very loud. It's very low-end. It's very rumbly. Mm. It's super fun. It's incredibly fun music.
But also, like, really heavy.
There's obviously Basic Bitches.
Yep.
And there's Mike Edison's Edison Rocket Train, which for one night only will have Crystal Grow on drums.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm pulling a double. I'm pulling a double, back-to-back sets.
And we have Open for Suggestions opening it. So it's genre-wise, we're going on a journey, but volume-wise, we're keeping it up there.
We're keeping it up there. Yeah. A great time to go out and maybe release some pent-up energy if you have any, right?
Definitely.
It's 5 to 9 at New Memories on Sunday. And for folks who may not seen you guys live, what's a Basic Bitches show like?
Well, we, above all else, we like to have fun.
Yeah.
So expect to dance, expect to shout along with a few bits. It's just two of us. We make more noise than you think two people should be able to make. But it's all about, it's punk rock, but it's joyful. That's what's important to us. Yeah, we have a lot of things to say, and hopefully you'll be there with us.
Yeah. I mean, and we enjoy doing this. I mean, this is also an opportunity for us to, like, play new songs and play with new bands and also, like, bring this community of musicians together. You know, what's, I think, also really cool about this is that it is a local bill.
Yeah.
All of these bands are local, local, loud, and, you know, I think, like Naomi was kind of saying, a lot of the shows and a lot of the music up here, it's a different style and we love it and we love that that's there. But as a community, like, we can throw like a really loud rock and roll show.
I believe you called it a rager
of
a rock and roll show.
We can throw a rager of a rock and roll show in a space like New Memories, which is just this like big, weird art space. Like it's cool to know that this can happen here and we're happy to be able to bring all of these people together, all of the bands and to support public radio. And, you know, we've got Rivertown Sound in Barryville helped design the flyer. And I'm making an edition of silkscreen posters to also sell. So like we're really collaborating around public radio, you know?
Well, and we appreciate that too. And tickets are $10 at the door and all the proceeds are going to benefit the station. Vitally important right now, as everybody knows. How do you talked about this a little bit, but just a little bit more about what you see as the relationship between this local music and local media and how they sustain each other.
Yeah. Well, I mean, WJFF has had us on several times, you know, to talk about.
You're basically our house band.
Good.
It's truly an honor and a privilege. Yeah. But, you know, you all have supported us and are supporting what we're doing. You know, you've had us on to talk about our music video. You've had us on to talk about other shows that we've done. You know, you've had other people on.
And I would also say that when I meet people in the community and I tell them what kind of music they play, we play, they say, wow, where do you even play up here?
Right.
And because it is tricky. A lot of venues we're too loud for.
Yeah.
When we do play, we need to make sure everybody knows about it. And that's where, like, public radio is vitally important.
Yeah.
And most of these bands that are playing have played with each other, but they've never all played at the same on the same bill.
Well, that's what's great about this bill. It's like a collection of, as you said, these really great local loud bands, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Any new music you're working on or anything you want to tease here before we go?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. We have a bunch of new songs. If you haven't seen us recently, which we haven't played up here very much this year, you're going to hear a lot of new music. We also have some new merch.
Yeah.
Everybody loves merch.
Yeah.
All right. That's Crystal Grow and Naomi Scott from Basic Bitches, who will be performing at WJFF Fest. In fact, they're the organizers of WJFF Fest. Thank you guys so much for that.
Thank
it's
you.
Sunday at New Memories in Parksville. Starts at 5, goes till 9, or who knows when. Tickets $10, and the proceeds are benefiting the station. Again, we're so grateful to you guys for all you do. Not only for us, but, you know, for being loud in the community. Let's go out on one of your newer songs, I suppose, the one that we featured recently as we had the premiere of the video at the Big Eddie Film Festival. There's No Crying in Baseball. This is Basic Bitches. Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much.
Hey!
that's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Hope to see you out at Double Down, the party at the Arnold House on Sunday, and then, of course, at WJFFS Sunday night. Thanks for listening. I'm Tim Bruno.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Dog Mountain Lodge, providing dog boarding and grooming, also boarding cats, birds, and other exotic pets. Located in Coshecton, New York, and on the web at dogmountainlodge.com. And from North American Cultural Laboratory, Highland Lake, New York, an experimental workspace for performing artists and inquisitive audiences, creating a space for community celebration throughout the year, nacl.org. And from listeners like you.
Amid ICE raids and with birthright citizenship under threat, historians recall the rise of the dual nation in Nazi Germany, where for a time, the illusion of lawfulness prevailed.
However, if you were part of a disfavored group, such as the Jews, you found yourself in a zone of lawlessness.
Two-track justice on this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Well, sunshine today and a high 56, clear and a low 41 tonight, but expect rainy weather tomorrow evening through Monday evening as that storm moves up the coast. Tomorrow, 57, then rain in the evening, 55 rain on Sunday, 53 rain on Monday.